DefineSelf.com.
I'm Greg Hunter. Welcome to USAWatchdog.com. My next guest is a regular and a national treasure. She has the Solari Report, the publisher of the Solari Report and Solari.com. I want to get her views on the election, the chaos, the contested election. You had Donald Trump winning by a record amount of votes, 13 million more than he got in the 2016 election. And yet a guy campaigning out of his basement supposedly won. Catherine Austin Fitz, thank you for joining us today on USAWatchdog.com.
Thank you, Greg, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. Boy, if I didn't have faith, I tell you, I'd be hanging onto a black hole of nothingness.
Exactly. But if you have faith, you know there's always a way. There's a way. There's a pathway.
What's going on with your view? You're over in, Amsterdam or in Holland, somewhere over that area.
I'm in the Netherlands.
Netherlands, okay. What's your view of what's going on with the contested election? I mean, lawsuits are flying. It looks like Sidney Powell did get a case on the docket at the Supreme Court after they rejected the, the other case from Texas, which a lot of people found was, outrageous. But what do you think's going on right now here in the United States? Why is this so contested? And an obvious winner is being denied the presidency.
So the elections in the United States for a long time have had serious election fraud, both voting fraud and covert operations. So this is, in one sense, this is standard operating procedure, but it's worse than ever. Because if you look at many of the lockdown restrictions on COVID-19, they were clearly designed to wipe out the businesses of millions of Trump supporters. And that was, so I would describe that as covert operations coming into the election, and really a war on populism, because the goal of the leadership is not just to put Biden in, but to really sit down and clamp down on anybody with independent revenues or independent stature who's supporting sort of real populist policy. So we're in the middle of a war on populism. But then the voting fraud, it looked to me from the beginning that the mail-in ballot system was designed to engineer a fraud. And it was interesting because the attorney general said that well before the election. He said this system can't possibly work. So we knew it was going to be a problem. It appears, this was Patrick Byrne's description, and I think it's probably accurate, that you had six large Democratic-controlled counties in six of the swing states. Trump was clearly winning those states, and then suddenly, we saw polls shut down or something happened, and all of a sudden, ballots plowed in, and it clearly looked very, very fraudulent, and I suspect it was. Now, the issue then becomes, what can you accomplish in the courts, and what can you prove in the way of both the digital fraud and the mail-in ballots? And it's really a state-by-state issue. And so this is really street politics. The problem the president has is it doesn't look like the Republican Party has backed him fully in fighting that sort of street war in the courts. So we see the bar coming out and pulling the rug out from under him. Now McConnell pulling the rug out from under him. And the question is, what can he accomplish? If you look at the kind of field that the Bushes fielded in 2000 when they finally won the election through the Supreme Court, that was a massive institutional effort. If you look at the legal effort that the Trump team has been fielding, it's been, I would call it the equivalent of landing on Normandy Beach with a water pistol. So they have not put into place the kind of team and infrastructure you feel when you intend to win something like this in the courts afterwards. And so that says to me that the Republican Party may not be broadly supporting the president.
This is really, you talked about this in, I just want to bring this up real quick too. It doesn't mean he can't win, right? He might still win in the legislature and maybe in the Supreme Court. Somebody will get, a backbone and say, yeah, you're right. They defrauded you. They changed the rules after the
election. So I would say it this way. If you look at the machinery of government, it is run by, many, many different layers of different groups. Some people call it the deep state. Other people call it secret societies or the intelligence agencies. But you have a huge infrastructure of people who get paid through the federal budget and treasury. So it's the think of this as a money pot, And all those moneyed interests have a big say in what happens, whether it's in the courts or in the legislature. And the politics of the situation is you have to have enough of them supporting you to win. And that's the question. Does the president have the political support he needs to make this case successful? You know, I don't know the answer, and I don't think we're going to be sure until January 20th.
Wow. It's going to go that long. You know, we had a pre-interview, and in the pre-interview, and I have a couple of big, you know, you had this out last year, but you put it out this year in the digital form. You put it out this year in this beautiful book. And it's
well, we couldn't finish the analysis until the COVID-19 had played out for a couple of months.
Yeah.
So this is an analysis dated as of October. And this is, to me, this is the best description I know of the going direct reset, which the central bankers approved in August 2019 and have been implementing ever since. When the Fed went into the repo market in September 2019, that was the beginning of the going direct reset.
Which is, we're going to go just do it ourselves and not do any voting. We just decided to do it, and a small group of people are just going to reset the entire economy.
Right. And what they're doing two things. The going direct reset includes doing what you can to extend the dollar reserve currency system and sort of bolster that while you accelerate the bringing in of a new system. And what's important to understand, Greg, is the new system is not a global reserve currency. The new system is a global control system that will be engineered through financial transactions, because the central banks will directly control everybody's wallet and bank account. So, for example, it was very interesting. The IMF had a gross border payments forum a month or two ago, and Carstens, we're going to use this in our annual wrap-up, which is on the going direct reset. Carstens said, you know, the beauty of the new central bank digital currencies is the central bank can totally control who can use it and not. And he was referring to controlling non-citizens using it, but what was very clear from what he said is they can stop a citizen. You know, they'll have total control. So think of it this way. If you look at the COVID restrictions that are happening around the world, so, you know, somebody in Sydney, Australia is told they can't go 5 miles more from their home. Literally, you're talking about a system where you can't, your money won't work, you know, beyond 5 miles from your home.
Wow. And this is all about really control. I mean, this
control.
Is
control. Well, it's not, these are not currencies. Central bank digital crypto is not a current. Crypto is not a currency. It's a crypt. It's the only way I can say it. It's the end of currencies. It's the death of currencies. Currency is something that's liquid. Currency is something, you know, I can put it in my pocket and walk away. This is a digital control system. This is a credit at the company store. You will be given a credit at the company store, and if you do what you're told, you can buy things at the company store. But you can't start your own store. And you can't build your own store. I mean, that's what we're watching right now in the U.S. economy. We're watching, this is how it works. The insiders' businesses are deemed essential and can stay open. And they can do a series of things to shut down all the independent people's businesses and herd all those cash flows into theirs. So you can't go to church and you can't sing, but you can stream Netflix. So you can shop. You can go to Costco, you can go to Walmart, you can, you know, so if KKR, Carlyle, BlackRock, you know, JP Morgan Chase and Citibank and the New York Fed member banks can make money from it, it's essential and you can do it. They can borrow from the Fed at 0%. Our credit cards cost 16 to 17%. This is how this works. This has nothing to do with an economy. You know, inequality is rigged through the Treasury and central bank credit mechanism. That's how it works. So this is economic warfare, and it's designed to destroy the independent producer. And that's designed to destroy democracy and move everybody into a control system, which is very tightly controlled.
And this is what this election is about as well. It's economic warfare. Who controls the money? Is that correct? Explain.
Yes. But I would say that both of the candidates represent the pro-centralization team. So I think I told you earlier, for every year we do scenarios for the annual wrap-up. And this year, the scenarios work, you have two axes. One is culture, one is finance. You know, so two variables, and that creates four quadrants, and those are your scenarios. So this year, our culture is human to inhuman. So are we going to have a human culture where humans are sovereign? Are we going to have an inhuman transhumanist culture where, you know, there's no individual sovereignty? And then the other access is they print, we print. Because what this is going to come down to is if a small group of people have a monopoly on creating whatever the financial system is, and they use that to control us totally, then we're going to be slaves. So if they can print money, we can print money. So the time has come that we have to have, you know, the freedom to start our own currencies. So you can't, when somebody has a complete digital control system, you cannot cede the monopoly of money creation to a small handful of people, or else you're going to be slaves.
And the dollar, you know, we're Saturday, and this last week the dollar had a rough time. It was down 89.75 and lower. It was broke below 90, the dollar. So if they're trying to keep this going, they're having a rough time of it, because the dollar's been plunging. It's down 5% since Election Day. What's going on with the dollar? Why are people sell?
So if you read State of Our Currency, it goes through the history of the last 20 years and all the different efforts to build swap and other arrangements in and around the dollar. It's called de-dollarization. And so we go through the history of de-dollarization and the sort of war for market share between the euro and the other currencies and the dollar, and steps that nation states are doing to get around this. Now, what's interesting is COVID-19 was very, very helpful to bolster and extend the dollar. So the dollar was in real trouble at the beginning of the year. Boom, COVID happened, very supportive of the dollar, which is why I said, you know, the intervention on behalf of the dollar was truly magical. But if you study the history of the dollar system, about 20 years ago, to extend a unipolar model globally, the syndicate that runs the dollar decided to use more and more invasive controls in the payment systems and in the financial system to force people to use the dollar. And so we've seen for the last 20 years a significant war between dollar market share and people trying to find ways around the dollar. And we reached a point last year where the tension between using the dollar for liquid global systems versus using it to control had reached real tension points. Now, how does that relate to this new system they're going to bring in? The dollar reserve currency has provided extraordinary benefits and resources to the general population in the G7 world. If that reserve currency status is lost, the question is, how are you going to manage the economic transition of the G7 population? Another way to say it is, if the China trade breaks down, you know, China has kept the false prosperity going for many decades, but now that they've built their infrastructure, you know, they want to finance the Silk Road, they want to finance the building of their own consumer economy. So the question is, now that you've basically sucked the assets out of the middle class in the G7, how are you going to manage the process of letting them know that their pension funds and retirement arrangements may not be what they expected?
You're saying that number one, we've been robbed, and number two, that the dollar tanking is foreigners selling it. Are foreigners selling it because they hate America, or are they afraid somehow?
So foreigners have not been anywhere as supportive of the dollar as they've been using it as a reserve currency asset, but they've been, generally the world has been looking to move away from dependency on the dollar. But the big problem now is that our budget is not sustainable for a variety of reasons. Let's look at a couple. One is that we had, starting in 1996, which you've covered with me many times on USA Watchdog, we had the equivalent of a financial coup d'etat. So starting in fiscal 1998, the federal fiscal year, we saw $21 trillion pulled out of the federal government. And we've also seen extraordinary bailouts in the 2008-2012 period, along with, you know, quantitative easing. And what all of that has done together, I call it a financial coup d'etat, is it's taken trillions, $50 trillion plus, and moved it out of the existing systems. And as you move the assets out of the existing system into new systems, you leave the liabilities behind. So now we're sitting, and the U.S. federal government has all the liabilities, whether it's Social Security, military pensions, healthcare, and to meet those obligations, it's printing massive amounts of money. You throw in COVID-19 and the pandemic, and then it has to print even more. And so you have we're in a debt spiral where the debt is literally rocketing up. In addition, Greg, what you've done, the last thing is you've created a mechanism with FASB 56 in 2018 where the federal finances can be run on essentially an entirely secret basis, as can a lot of the finances of the companies that do business with the government. And that includes the New York Fed member banks who act as depository for the U.S. government. So you've created a mechanism where the U.S. federal finances are essentially secret and out of control. Now, there's no such thing as a democratic process where the money is managed criminally for 20 years straight in a row and has now gone dark and is being managed on an out of control basis. Now, let's step back. If you're the world, this makes you very nervous because the federal credit mechanism is basically the center point of the whole global financial system. But from watching America and how it's conducting itself, it doesn't look like it's under adult supervision.
So this election chaos is playing into that.
Right. So you have the global trading system, the global reserve assets, the global pension funds, and the global national security umbrella, all dependent on the U.S. government, and the U.S. government is not acting in accordance with its roles and responsibilities.
And people are nervous? Is that why the dollar is selling off?
People are nervous, but the dollar is selling off not because they're nervous. The dollar is selling off because if you watch the existing teams and if you watch what they're saying and doing, there's no light at the end of the tunnel. There's no team and no presentation that looks like it's going to come back to something sensible for all the allies globally.
So they're dumping the dollar. I mean, we're down 5% since election day.
They're not dumping the dollar. If they were dumping the dollar, we'd be in the 70s.
Oh.
Remember, you have all the people who are looking to migrate away from the dollar, with rare exception, one being Russia. Everyone is dependent on the dollar system. Everybody has central bank reserves that are in the dollar. Everybody has pension funds that own treasury securities. So the global financial system is highly dependent on the dollar at the same time that the dollar is getting weaker. If you listen to what I'm saying, you would think that the dollar system was toast. Now, it is perfectly possible to reform the dollar system and to get the dollar reserve system, currency system working well. But I don't think there's a group of leadership that's willing to make the commitment to do that. And that's part of the problem, because for the last 25 years, we've had an incredibly non-cohesive and corrupt U.S. leadership class.
Well,
now there was hope when Trump was elected. There was hope that Trump would go in and bring such a group in and be able to build such a team. That didn't happen. And one of the reasons it didn't happen was, you know, the people who didn't want Trump in there did everything they could to destroy him, the teamwork. You know, if you've ever taken the kind of beating that he took, he stood it fairly well, but he didn't you know, he was not able to stand that beating and also build a team, which takes an enormous amount of, you know, it just takes an enormous amount of patience and tolerance for being, you know, hit with mud pies and not retaliating.
Yeah. It's, I mean, the Russia hoax and the impeachment for a phone call that was okay, nothing wrong with it. You know, COVID, I mean, just one thing after another. It's just awful. I mean, it's just been awful. Do you think he can? And I want to bring this up to you. You brought this up in the pre-interview. I mean, he's supposed to have this report out. Well, it's supposed to be Friday, but he's got 45 days after the election day to basically do some pretty serious stuff.
I just have to tell you, whatever the problems are in America, real reform cannot come from who's in the Oval Office. So I've told the red button problem many times on USA Watchdog today. I'm not going to tell it again. If anybody wants to hear the red button story, they just do a search on YouTube, Fitz, YouTube, the red button story, you'll get it. But what the red button story says is the swamp is from sea to shining sea. And the American people are going to have to shift their cash flows, their investments, their time, their money, in a way that takes us out of being a corrupt society into a society that's excellent. So the problem, you know, we have 3,100 counties, Greg, and we need to solve this one county at a time, bottom up, including shifting the money. You can't have all the money in the country being spent outside the law and a lot of the behavior outside the law and think you're going to get anywhere by changing who the president is.
You think that it's going to be a tough road for Trump because he doesn't have the backing of the Republican. Mitch McConnell was telling people in the Senate, don't contest the election.
So when Barr pulled the rug out from under Trump 2 weeks ago, that was pretty shocking.
Yeah,
and what that said to me was the key components of the Republican Party would not support him. The machinery was not prepared to support him,
even though he won huge.
I don't know why they were not willing to support him. I'm assuming they've made deals.
Well, there
could be many. If you and I want to engage in speculating, you know, there are many possible reasons. One of which is all of the U.S. leadership at this point has so many criminal liabilities. It's astonishing.
Pompeo came out and talked about all the China people involved, Swalwell, and then you have Hunter Biden, who got $1.5 billion from China, and then you have Feinstein, who had a spy, a Chinese national spy for years, driving her around, listen to what she was saying on the phone. You have Swalwell with what the FBI said was a spy. They kept it from Congress. I mean, you have D&I Ratliff saying that there's a China involvement in our election, and Trump's supposed to make some announcement on Friday, which could be rough. And you're saying, you know, he can do what he wants, but don't suspend the Constitution. That's what a lot of people want, martial law. And you say, no, you don't. You don't want that. Why?
So the push for martial law is not coming from the Trump supporters. They may be repeating it. That's coming from somewhere in the deep state, probably the intelligence agencies, because the only way they can confiscate the guns is if they get martial law going. And the way to get it going is to get Trump and his supporters to do it. Then you can blame them. The minute you propose martial law, the minute you can temporarily suspend the Constitution, the deep state will grab the guns, they will grab a whole bunch of property, they'll put a whole bunch of people in prison, they will drive, you know, a Panzer division through that window.
You're saying don't do it.
Only do it if you want to commit suicide and you want to take 325 million people with you.
So do whatever you do. If you were going to advise the president, you'd say, Mr. President, do whatever you do, but do it in the confines of the Constitution.
Right. And I'm just going to give a rant, because if you've been sitting on your couch watching QAnon, but you still bank with the New York Fed member banks, you still invest in the New York Fed member banks, you haven't, you know, gone up your chain of command in your county, your state, and your country on your tax money being used illegally, There are thousands of things. If you come into Sillery, there are thousands. If you haven't financed your local farmers building a fresh food fund, if you haven't supported the farm to legal defense fund to, protect your local farmers, I could go on and on and on and on and on. You either decentralize the money and decentralize economic resiliency, or you're not serious. And thinking that you cannot do all of those different things and somehow some guy in the White House is going to make a difference, you're dreaming. It's a pipe dream.
It's going to be a group effort.
But here's the thing. There is no federal government, Greg. There is a budget. There is a money mechanism. It prints money and it spends money. But there's no sovereign government left. If you go to Washington, all of the cash flows are controlled and operated by defense contractors and banks. There is no government official who controls any of those line spendings. You make a budget once a year, you allocate the money, and then you spend, and everybody feeds off the pot. That's, you've got a pot of money and a budget. You no longer have a sovereign government. Oof. That's what you have to understand. There is no federal government. There's a big pot of money. Now, what we still have is we have a constitution. And to a certain extent, although it's been trampled and disrespected and many people have tried to shred it, there's a lot of things you can't do in America. And the people who run the country take it very seriously. And it is a spiritual covenant, first and foremost, between all the people in America. And we've been spoiled. We are so spoiled. We have so enjoyed that bubble that we have no idea what's going to happen if that bubble comes down.
And this whole reset is about destroying God and destroying religion and Jesus and shut down churches. And you can go to Walmart and it'd be packed, but you can't go to church and sing. Oh, tell me about that. Why are they doing that?
If you hold up the dollar, what does it say? It says, "In God we trust." Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so a liquid currency with the breadth of the dollar depends on faith in the law and faith in a divine intelligence, that there's something bigger. Remember what do our founding documents say? They say our freedom comes to us by divine authority, right?
Yes.
Right. So to destroy that system, you have to destroy those things. And if you look at the COVID-19 lockdowns, the number one target has been the churches. They are trying to bankrupt and destroy the churches. They tried to buy them first. So we've seen tremendous amounts of federal government money rolling out to rebuild, refinance churches, build bigger churches, grants for churches. It's incredible how they tried to. I used to be on a budget committee on one of my churches, and I ended up in a huge war because literally the Department of Justice was trying to buy up all the churches. I said, why would you take money and enter into legal, a very restrictive legal contract with the same entity that's pouring drugs into this neighborhood? Why would you do that? Seems like legal suicide to me. Anyway, but it is clear that there is a war on the churches. And what's been interesting to see the pastors not understand what is really happening here. There's a wonderful interview this year with Tucker Carlson where he was grilling the governor of New Jersey as to why the liquor stores would stay open and the churches were deemed to be non-essential. And the governor couldn't answer the question, and he kept asking and asking, and finally he said, "Well, what about the Bill of Rights?" And the governor said, "Well, that's above my pay grade."
Unbelievable.
Well, here's the important thing. I just read a great newsletter from Sophia Smallstorm where she describes the failure of the Comanches to stop and be able to protect their lands and their lives. And the problem was not that they couldn't defeat the Europeans' technology. The problem is they couldn't fathom its existence. And as you talk to people around any aspect of the going direct reset, they can't fathom what the world looks like from the central banker's point of view. Because the central bankers are very afraid. You know, they're very afraid of the population. Because for many years, the way, the way they've done what they've done is to keep everything secret and to pay the population off. And now that they can't pay the population off, they still don't want to, you know, sort of let down the veil of the secrecies. And they have no way of explaining it. The former head of Luxembourg once said, "We know what to do. We don't know how to get elected after we do it."
Let's move on to this real quick. Your other report that you have, this is your latest one that you've had. And I want to read one thing real quick here. And it said in here that this was, I just want to get this quote. This is the most significant violation of Nuremberg Code in modern history. And you later said it's the most significant violation of Nuremberg Code in history, period, the end. And that they...
I would take that back. I would say that the Bolshevik Revolution was still number one, but we're on our way.
This is... you also say it's not a vaccine. It's supposed to be medicine, but this isn't medicine. Explain.
So I first got involved. I didn't know anything about vaccines other than I'd had some when I was a kid, Greg, until I became an investment advisor. And one of the things I discovered as an investment advisor is that the number one thing harming a family's financial net worth in America is health. And the incident of health fraud, including vaccine injury, was astonishing. And what I didn't appreciate until I dealt with family after family after family after family is the extraordinary financial and emotional and psychological damage that this does to a family. So the two best documentaries to sort of understand what has happened to families in America as a result of vaccine injury are Vaxxed and Vaxxed 2. And there's a mother in Vaxxed who describes her calculation is that a heavily vaccine injured child, a lot of neurological damage probably from the heavy metals, will cost you $5 million over the child's lifetime. Because remember, not only do you have to raise a child with extraordinary special needs who may even be very, very violent and not able to communicate successfully and never to be able to be potty trained. So you're talking about somebody who will live their, you know, into their adult life, not potty trained. So an extraordinarily difficult, sort of staffing requirement, but you are required to provide for them for their entire life. So the cost is unbelievably dramatic. And then if you look at the impact on the whole family system, on the other siblings, their time, their upraising, on marriages, it's a real, you know, it causes many divorces and destroys marriages. So you're talking about amazing destruction of the family system and finances. And that's never fully disclosed. If you look at an informed consent, you might get I'm writing a piece on this now. If you look at informed consent, they tell you what the possibilities say of an adverse event is, but nobody points out an adverse event will destroy your marriage and cost you $1 to $5 million. You know, I used to have these incredible fights with other members in the family. So somebody was a grandparent or an aunt or uncle, and they would say, "Well, it's not my decision. It's not my business." I would say, wait a minute, you have the $5 million and your child doesn't, or your niece doesn't. You know, so when they need the $5 million, guess where they're going to come? You're the family banker. Do you want to spend your money on building a successful family? Or do you want to spend your money on, you know, taking care of an adult in diapers for the next 40 years?
Let's fast forward to the thing now. I mean, I had a friend of mine had his father in a nursing home, and he got COVID, and he's pretty smart. And he said that, you know, listen, I got him to give HCQ, hydroxychloroquine, which the AMA just released in October. They told him it was evil, it would cause heart arrhythmia and morbidity and all that. And then they just released it to give it to you. So the doctor gave him that, and he also a testimony in front of Congress. Ivermectin also works very good. Gave him both, and within 2 days, no cough, no fever. Boom, boom, just done. Got safe, done. He's okay. But yet they're getting pushed this vaccine, to a medical worker. We just had a medical worker.
There's no need for under the law, Greg, a vaccine is defined as medicine. And if you look at what is in these injections, this is not medicine. I believe it's an operating system that will be part of the currency system. So I believe the reason this is being pushed so aggressively is to get the new currency system in, because you're talking about, as I said, a control system. If I can, how the game was played. We put an operating system on your computer. It has a back door. We make you, you have to upgrade it every other month because of viruses, okay? So what does Moderna call their vaccine? They called it in January, I think January 2019 or January 2020, the software of life. So I think they're putting an operating system in you, and they're going to use viruses to make you steadily upgrade. And this is all to hook you up to the DoD clouds. I think it's absolutely the mark of the beast. There was a group, I should mention, there was a group of Italian researchers in 2017 who took 41 vaccines and tried to figure out what was in them. So we're talking about fetal tissue. We're talking about, DNA from the other sex. We're talking about nanoparticles that nobody can quite be sure what they do. What we do know is that the head of Operation Warp Speeds, he was the head of the research group at GlaxoSmithKline, and his expertise was brain-machine interface. So we're talking about nanoparticles that have the ability to insert brain-machine interface into your brain through injection.
In other words, not really medicine. It's made to control.
That's just certainly like the currency system. I mean, that's the question. What is in these things? My understanding is the Pfizer vaccine, the ingredients are secret, and that's why they wouldn't go into Operation Warp Speed.
And if you take a look at the stuff you've put out, and you have, when you talk about nanotechnology, you've written a lot about that. You've had people on, but it's in this book in great detail.
Right, we have a whole section there, and we have a section in State of Our Currencies on creepy technology. If you come into Solari, in our news, trends, and stories, we have a database called Dr. Gates's Creepy Technology. Because if you look at both what they're doing with the injections, but also what's happening in the lab, we're watching an explosion of biotech designed to change the human body, hook it up to digital machines, and also to create synthetic food. I don't know if you saw it. Some researcher came out with the idea of making meat from human cells, explaining that it's not cannibalism if the meat comes from your own cells.
This is really a war on God, isn't it? God's creation?
Well, it's a war. So there are two visions. One vision is that we are a sovereign individual under divine intelligence, and our freedom comes to us by divine intelligence. That's one vision. And I would describe that as a human civilization. The other vision is we are hyper-materialists. Everything is physical. There is, there's a limited electromagnetic reality. And we are a natural resource to be harvested like livestock. And you can change men into women and women into men, and add a whole bunch of digital components and make a super soldier. And it's all very fluid.
That sounds like a war between good and evil. It's like a war on God. Whatever God made, not good enough.
So the question is, are we going to be hyper-materialists governed by a demonic spirit, or are we going to be sovereign individuals governed by a divine intelligence? Those are the two visions.
Wow. But gold, earlier this year, one of the things you said, or maybe it was late last year, you said, gold's going to be good. Gold's going to be a good investment. And sure enough, it's been a good investment. Bitcoin's gone to 23,000 from 10,000, I think, in September. And gold's gone up all year long. Are you still thinking gold's
a
good...
Remember, if you want to build a global crypt system,
Yeah.
They're going to use it with the central banks. You want Bitcoin, you want to pump Bitcoin for two reasons. One, to keep building the crypto system, but the other is to suck money away from gold and precious metals.
Would they be higher if it wasn't for Bitcoin?
Absolutely.
You would still have gold and silver. You would have that as a core. You have said in the past that you need a core investment and an investment in a investment position and a core position. Explain.
Right. So if you come into Solari and you do a search, I have an article called "What Percentage of My Assets Should I Hold in Precious Metals?" And this explains it in great detail if you want to go through it. But I say you should have a core position and an investment position. A core position is central bank insurance that you have for the worst case. So you always hear me say, always have enough gold to bribe the border guards. But that's your gold position. And what I recommend is that people decide, how many people do I want to be responsible for in the worst case? And then how much do I want per person? So, you know, that's for the wildly inflationary scenario or a complete breakdown scenario. So that's your core position. The investment position you have is part of your savings and investment portfolio. What you do and how you do depends on many things related to your unique situation, but you should only be, you know, buying and accumulating if gold and silver look attractive, which they still do. Now, just remember, as an investment position, they can be very, very volatile. And you know, there's no dividends, so you've got to get capital gains to cover your expenses. So it's something you need to know about. But I said for the last 2 years it'd be a good investment for the last 2 years, and it has been. I think it will be next year as long as you're prepared to live through. We could have some pretty big drops or deflationary scenarios. So you just need to be sure if you buy that you're prepared to manage through those volatile periods.
To hold on to it, not get pushed into selling out and stuff like that. And we could get into, I mean, they could lose control of this thing, right? I mean, they basically, the Fed keeps telling us they want inflation, but they may get a tremendous crash. I mean, all these assets, all these real estate, commercial real estate tanking, and they don't need the buildings anymore. And, you know, the dollar's tanking. They're going to have to raise rates if they want to keep the dollar game going for a little longer. And then that kills residential real estate. I mean, we could get into a crash scenario, right?
So the way we get into a crash scenario is what I call the Midianite thing. So my favorite story in the Bible is the story of Gideon, and basically Gideon is asked to throw the Midianites out of Israel, and he does, but the way he wins is the Midianites kill each other. So I think the, you know, the danger is you see factionalism break out and things get out of hand. And we've seen, you know, short periods of that this year, but it could get much, much worse. So there's always that danger when the central bank is take us into the global invention room that things can get out of hand.
Yeah, they may get crazy. And, you know, and speaking of inventions, I mean, you know, I tried like anything to try to get this magazine. Somebody finally said it to me. They took it off the stand immediately. Of course, now we got this. They're also bright. They've been telling us that the guy that, you know, that said that they, what did he say? What was the quote? It was, we've assembled the biggest voter fraud operation in the history of American politics. Apparatus. I think that's what he said.
So here's...
here the book ends. I don't think either one will ever be president. Well, she won't be, but I don't think he'll be president. I just think God's going to step in some way, shape, or form.
Well, but here's the problem. You have a federal credit mechanism which is operating significantly outside the law. And either we, you know, county by county are prepared to step up and do something about that, or there's no good scenario that comes out of Washington. Washington is not our friend and can't help us.
It's like Hunger Games. They just keep sucking the money in and they keep creaming us. That's what it's like.
So get out your gold and silver coins and start a community currency.
Yeah.
Because if they have a monopoly on money, we're toast. Because they're not planning, Greg, on a new currency system. They're planning on a slavery system.
Solari.com is the website. The Solari Report is what you put out. And you don't even need to... you know, just go to Solari.com. It has a lot of free information there, too. Catherine Austin Fitz, Thank you very much for joining us today on USAWatchdog.com.
Greg, have a very, very Merry Christmas and a prosperous and happy New Year. Your audience, too.
DefineSelf.com.